Today's February 3rd, 2016. That was a loud gavel. This is a joint committee on Ways and Means, subcommittee on public safety. Today we have three work sessions, and we'll go ahead and open up a work session on the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, additional training classes.
Can I interrupt first?
Oh, please. I was going to have you talk about that, but or is Julie?
Julie's talking about that.
Okay, fair enough.
So I'm going to slip into the work session and do a very quick orientation for the Public Safety Subcommittee. I'm Linda Gilbert. I'm the Committee Administrator for the Public Safety Sub, and we are fortunate to have Mr. Eric Sorensen over there as our Committee Assistant. Changes from the long session: you will not work budget bills in the subcommittee as you do in the long session, but you will work some budget items that will go to an omnibus reconciliation bill subject to your approval. Public hearing time will be limited due to having only a few subcommittee meetings. Posted on OLAS for you is an orientation document, the rules that were adopted by full Ways and Means on Monday, February 1st, a list of the public safety agencies and LFO analysts attached to those agencies, meeting materials associated with the three agency items that you will hear today. The subcommittee work plan is, of course, subject to change, but today you are having a report, a request, and a grant request. And on Monday, you will have some Department of Corrections items. No meeting a week from today. The last two meetings of the seven that you will have are reserved for policy bills, should any come our way. And finally, in this room, the screen in the back does not work, but the screen to the right does. You'll figure that out very soon. And I think that's all I have for you.
Well, thank you so much.
And Ms. Naburka will take over for DPSSD.
All right, Julie, I was excited. I want to open the work session, so we're ready to go with the training classes if you want to go ahead and begin.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Rayfield, committee members. The first item up this afternoon is the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training with a request to add additional basic police and basic corrections training classes in the current biennium.
All right, and we'll call Director Gablicks.
Thank you, Co-Chair Rayfield, Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee. For the record, Eric Gablicks, the Director of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. As many of you probably will recall, we visited with you a few weeks ago, and you were kind enough to approve a Criminal Justice Commission grant, but we also laid the groundwork for the request that's in front of you today, which is the need for additional training classes. At that time, I shared with you that we were doing a survey on what the need is. We had a pretty good feel from delays in basic training, students getting in, what it was, but I'm going to share some numbers with you that shows the magnitude of what we're working on. So we surveyed our constituents, city, county, state, tribal, and university law enforcement agencies. The first question we asked them is, how many vacant positions do you currently have that you are in the process of filling, and these people are not scheduled for a basic training class? Currently, law enforcement, so the police family, 425 positions we're working to fill. Again, city, county, state, tribal, university. County Corrections, 199, Parole and Probation, 55, and Telecommunications, 113. The top two are the ones that we are most concerned about because those are very big numbers. To add a little bit more, what concerns us, not that we're not concerned about this, but we're concerned about potential retirements. We also asked, in addition to that first question, how many of your people are eligible to retire this year? For police, the number of eligible retirees is 495, county corrections 111, parole and probation 45, and telecommunications 66. The wild card with this is while they're eligible to retire, it doesn't mean that they will retire, but we have to have the capacity at the academy to train these men and women when they do get hired. So the first slide really feeds into this slide, and quite honestly, we don't have enough seats in the academy to accommodate what's happening. We currently offer 13 basic police classes. That's what we have within our 15-17 budget. Those are 16 weeks in length. We offer five, or have budgeted five, corrections classes. Those are 6 weeks in length. Parole and probation, we have two classes scheduled. Those are 5 weeks in length with an additional week if they carry a firearm. And telecommunications, we have 8 3-week classes scheduled. And again, we're focusing on police and corrections, because that's the biggest number. We have a request in front of you for $2,790,195, which will fund four additional 16-week basic police classes and two additional 6-week basic corrections classes. The one thing I will share with you while this addresses what we're seeing today, we don't know what the back end of this biennium looks like. So if those retirement numbers truly solidify and become a reality, we may be back to having to ask for more funds to finish up what's in potentially the pipeline coming forward. So that's the request in a nutshell, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director, your second slide. You're saying vacant positions you're currently in the process of filling.
Correct.
Is that filling for the academy, or what? I don't understand.
Co-chairs and Representative Wisnett, good question. What we asked is, how many people are you looking to make an offer to hire that are not currently enrolled in a basic class?
And not programmed, Mr. Chair, follow up.
Yeah, please.
Are not planned to be in one of these 16 classes.
Correct. Right. Yeah. Right. So we have, and co-chairs and Representative Wisnett, we have a capacity issue, but not in bricks and mortar. We have run 11 classes a year during that big hiring system we saw 10 years ago. We don't have the staff currently to do that. So the request in front of you is not bricks and mortar. We have the dorms. We have the facilities. We simply don't have the staff or the resources to do that. So this will allow us to basically lean in and address this issue.
Follow up, please. So how many, we're looking at 13 classes in police for 16 weeks. Mm-hmm. How many police officers are in the per class?
40 per class, Representative.
Okay, so that 40 times 13 is 500 some people.
Yes, and co-chairs are there's a fudge factor, if I could use that term, and that is, while agencies are recruiting this number, here's the challenge that we're seeing and hearing. Agencies are having a tough time getting a person to say yes. They are recruiting. State Police, Portland Police Bureau, all of our agencies are actively recruiting to fill these slots, but they're seeing people not make it through background due to ethical issues, truthfulness, criminal convictions. So while they may have a number of applicants, that doesn't mean they'll, at the end of the day, shake someone's hand and we want you to work here. The other thing that has been referred to in some cases as the post-Ferguson effect, is this really a time that you want to come into law enforcement with all the scrutiny going on? So that's creating some recruiting challenges. On the flip side, agencies are hiring. This is the target they're looking to fill, but they're not going to all show up as once. I think Representative Wisdom probably gets at the crux of the question. What if they show up tomorrow? We can't train them for months. We're going to have a backlog, but agencies are actively recruiting. Another anecdotal piece, we had a basic police class graduate in May, and what we heard from chiefs and sheriffs is they had made offers to people to be officers that maybe 2 years ago they wouldn't have offered a job to. Because they had some issue, but they figured either the academy would wash them out or they'd catch them in a field training program, and if not, they would hopefully be successful. Out of that class of 40, 25% of those officers no longer work. So 10 of those students no longer work in law enforcement. So the system vetted them out, but we trained 10 people that are not working in law enforcement, but that's the cost of doing business, unfortunately.
So is this coming out of the e-board, or is this going to come out of the... We're going to be able to delay it to the next budget.
This goes into the omnibus bill.
So for the rebalance during this special session. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Bates.
This is seemed like a bust and booze business to me. I remember where we had a job fair once for state patrol officers, and after a huge amount of training and expense, they all went to other states, I think Washington the most. Do you have any way of predicting better what you expect to see the next 5 years as far as people coming and going, retirees, expansion of forces, all those things that occur in every business? Is it really difficult for you to sort of look ahead and say, this is what our needs are? A question goes along with that, too, if I could include two in here, is, let's say a city of Medford hires somebody, what do they do with them for 2 or 3 months waiting to get them into the academy?
So, Co-Chair Senator Bates, a number of questions there, and let me kind of try to slice them up and make them a little easier to answer. So I think what we're seeing right now in the recruiting world is following other industries, teaching, nursing, where a lot of agencies are getting creative by what they're doing to recruit. Agencies are offering signing bonuses. They're offering bonuses to officers to recruit officers to come sign up. Portland has proposed $1,000 if an officer recruits a person that comes and becomes an officer, and $7,500 if they complete their trial service after 18 months. So I think agencies are getting creative. We also know that agencies often hire laterals, so they will hire a seasoned officer and pay a higher rate, which means they're usually vacuuming a smaller agency that pays less and may not have all the same specialties. But you know, they can offer motors, canine, detectives, those kind of things that are attractive to an officer that wants to do something. We also see people retire from larger agencies, but maybe go work a second career in a smaller community where they're below the PERS cap. So I think we're seeing all of that. As far as the forecast, it's a different place than it was years ago. People joined up and they would be there for 20, 25, 30 years as an officer or retire, and you have a few people on this panel that have done that. But today, agencies aren't looking at a person that's going to be there for 25 years. They're very happy if they're there for 5 or 10. And that's a different expectation than we've heard in the past. And then the other thing that we have seen implemented more than ever is a term we call a poaching bill. But years ago, the legislature passed the statute, which is in 181, our statute, that says if you recruit and hire an officer within the first 3 years from another agency in Oregon, you will reimburse that agency prorated costs for that hire. And it's prorated, so the first year is obviously higher percentage, the second year is lower. But that's not only the time that they spend with us, but it's also getting them to their certification, the field training officer premium pay, and whatever expense, so body armor, uniforms, equipment, because that local community has expended that money. Now they have a way to recoup their costs when that person goes to another agency. So it's, I hope I answered it, but it's a pretty interesting time.
Sounds pretty complex and having a hard time predicting.
Yes, thank you, Senator.
Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that information on OLIS right now?
Yes.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
One of the questions that I had is looking at this, the way that the request is made is that this would roll up into the next biennium. And looking at the numbers, that, you know, obviously when you go into a recession, there's a lot of factors that affect the need for these. My initial inclination is to, as we look at where our budget is going to be in 2 years, is not necessarily create costs where we don't know exactly what the demand will be in 2 years and then have the flexibility for you to come back and tell us, hey, this is where we're at. This is our need. Can you help me through that process and make sure that, you know, at least my thinking isn't faulty?
Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, we ask that these become part of our budget and roll into current service level because we see this is where the trend is going to be for a number of years for us. The challenge that we have when we schedule a curriculum or a schedule for 15-17 is we have to figure out where those classes are, and that gets back to Senator Bates's question that I realize I didn't answer the one part, is when an agency makes an offer and they grab that officer, so let's use an example, metro area. Beaverton, Hillsborough, Washington County, Gresham may be trying to recruit that same applicant. They're going to get them to sign first, and this is a lot like recruiting for athletic programs. And they will pay that person to work in records or some other non-armed position for 90 days before they can get an academy. The challenge that we have and why we're hoping you're supportive of the long-term issue we're looking at here is that we need to have those classes ready to go in July and basically spread them out over the year so agencies aren't waiting 90 days. We would love for them to be at the academy like within the next week after they get sworn in because the largest liability to that city, county, state, tribe is an untrained officer carrying a sidearm riding with a coach that may make a life or death decision and they have no training whatsoever, which is a very high risk thing that causes us a lot of concern.
So how do we deal with it? So if we're going to roll these in and the demand is going to go up and down, mm-hmm. How do we deal with the fact that, you know, you may have a larger budget than what you need in a given period?
Co-Chair, I believe what we're asking for is sustainable for the next 3 to 4 years. My concern is we may be coming back to ask for additional classes. Mm-hmm. And we, years ago during reductions when things ramped down, we lost more than 30 positions at DPSST, mostly in the training division, to deal with that. So we're right now trying to ramp up, but not to be at the platinum level, but at the current service level that we're seeing for hiring.
And I'm more concerned in 2 years when we have significant shortfalls in the state. That's kind of where I'm coming
from. I understand, Co-Chair.
Yeah. Is there any other
Mr. Chair, I think if I remember this right, and I could be wrong, these are really truly other funds. This is funded by state and local, not by state government, but by local governments, right?
Correct. Co-chair and Senator Bates, DPSST is not a general fund agency. We're criminal fines and assessments, although some people use the term fungible, because what's not used for DPSST does go to general fund. It's a other fund.
Senator, so this would be a general
still,
fund?
If it's fungible, it's, fungible. Yeah. It's still general fund.
Yes.
It's very much like it.
But let's go ahead and stand at ease for a moment. Or would you like to give us your recommendation?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends that an increase of $2,790,195 in other funds expenditure limitation for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, an authorization to establish 12 permanent full-time positions, which is 8 FTE, be included in a budget reconciliation bill during the 2016 legislative session.
And Mr. Co-Chair, I think we would like to amend the LFO recommendation to recommend that the positions be added as limited duration positions.
Okay, so Senator Shields has moved to approve the request, but amend the request to have it be for limited duration positions. Is there any discussion?
So, Mr. Chair.
We'll do Representative Gorsuch, Representative Wisnant.
How will that impact your agency if these are limited duration rather than full?
So, Co-Chairs, Representative Gorsuch, the challenge that we have, and maybe to give you some insight into the positions, not all of those, while we call them FTE, will be full-time employees. What we're very fortunate to have is what we call the flexible workforce, where a lot of our part-timers and staff at the venues fill those positions. So one FTE may be filled by 20 part-timers. So a firearms instructor may work for another agency but works for us in their days off or maybe retired. So for the part-timers, we're okay with that. I think for the full-time positions, the challenge we have is recruiting somebody to come from their agency to leave where they have stability and seniority to come work for DPSST, not knowing in 2 years, or actually shorter than that, if they'll have a job, because they'll be the low man on the totem pole and the most likely to be bumped if we reduce. So that's the challenge we would have with the LD positions in those categories. So that will be for the full-time training coordinators, the custodial staff, or the facility staff that we've asked for.
And just as one of the dynamic that we have is we can either approve these and cut them later if we're facing a $1 billion shortfall come the next biennium. And either way, there is no predictability for your budget in 2 years, and I think that's the really the point where our state is at this time. As I'm looking at this, is if we do the limited duration, at least we can come back and say, hey, here's the need. This is what you need as an agency. It's kind of the direction that I was kind of thinking along those lines. So, but Representative Wisnant.
Thank you. Just a clarification, Mr. Chair, is so limited through June of 17, is that correct? Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Bates?
We have three officers on this panel. Are they going to have trouble filling these positions of a limited duration? I mean, if you move from one department to another, do you lose your seniority? I mean, if you even take a permanent situation, you could be bumped if we have to cut back. But what's your sense of it? You guys are inside the system. I rely on you.
If you leave your agency, everything goes away. So it shifts over to whatever the arrangement is with DPSST. I think it would be somewhat difficult myself. I don't know how the other two.
To work part-time there?
Yeah, to give up a full-time position at a police department and then just go work there, knowing that maybe in a year you don't have a job.
Yeah, it would be tougher to do that. I mean, but if you move jobs, it's always there's always some risk of that. So,
and I think just from a perspective here, that we could sit here and make these full-time positions, and people could be lured away from their job, and we're not really giving the applicant the full information about the tenuous situation that this state is in come 2 years down the road. And so they make assumptions that this is a full-time position, and we come back in 2 years and we have significant budget cuts that we have to make, with the looming budget. So that is a concern, is the transparency on that.
If I may.
Please, Representative Gorsuch.
I understand that concern. On the other hand, there are a lot of unknowns in the future, and we may be able to fund these positions, you know, for 20 years. So I think if agencies like DPSST, and I suspect you are upfront with funding issues and how that can impact people, I think it's better to get folks, get them on the way, and have them locked into those positions rather than just say, well, maybe we'll keep you for a year.
Representative Krieger.
Well, the people that you have at BST, BNST are retired and working or ready to retire. I went ahead and took a position because you mentioned earlier that you might have 15 or 20 people fill a position over time. Mm-hmm. So you must have people coming and going and available on some type of a list to teach certain types of classes.
Co-chairs and Representative Krieger, that is true for so let me answer that with two parts. One is from our full-time staff that are there 40 hours a week. We have just over 6 PERS retirees that work for us full-time in a training position, and that's the PERS exemption we have that they can work as long as they're a trainer. But the bulk of our retirees are in those part-time slots where we have LD positions that we basically manage the part-time workforce, and probably 50% of those are retirees. We have a lot more flexibility with the part-time pool because we only need them when we have classes scheduled. So we have one full-time firearms coordinator who's supported by over 80 part-timers that we spool up the resource when we're teaching firearms, and they come and teach. So we've got a lot more flexibility there with recruiting, and we're constantly recruiting that pool because people aren't available. It's hunting season. We need more people. They retire, move away. But for the full-time people, the challenge we have is getting them to sign up. And if we're straight up say, look, you know, this is for 2 years and we don't know what happens after that, the question is, will those people come and apply? And very few, I mean, we have some retirees that have applied full time, but that's not, we're trying to get really mid-level career people that are passionate about training, and no criticism about retirees, but the challenge that we often hear is that, you know, they've retired and things are changing in technology and in the field. We want to get people in that are current and what's happening in policing on the streets.
He just called us dinosaurs.
Co-chairs and kindly.
I did it in the hallway.
He did it kindly though.
Yes.
It was nice.
What I would like to do is move something that this committee feels comfortable with. I'm not interested in pushing something one way or the other, and so I'd like to gauge the temperature.
With the amendment. I'm not completely comfortable. I think of the other budgets I have that are $24 to $25 billion. This is fairy dust to us, nothing personal. And I appreciate the chair's position that we have a real problem coming in 17, 19 if things don't change. A real problem. I don't think this affects it very much, and I have very big concerns about public safety, especially when we think about what's going on in other parts of the country as far as officers being accused of unnecessary force and other issues, body cams, everything is becoming in. I think it's important these people be trained as quickly and as well as possible. I'm very concerned about this. I think it's a real sensitive issue. One person dies out there because we didn't get people trained well and fast. I think it's a public safety issue. I don't feel comfortable making them temporary. I really want to go with the original request.
That's so I think we have two members that do not feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. Senator, would you be willing to withdraw your motion?
Yes. I move the LFO recommendation.
Okay. Is there any more discussion on that motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, motion carries. I will go ahead and carry it to full, and we'll close the work session and open a work session on the grant request.
Thank you, Co-Chair Rayfield. The next item is also from DPSST. It's seeking retroactive approval to apply for the Assistance to Firefighters grant.
Please.
Thank you, Co-Chair Rayfield, Co-Chair Seals, members of the committee, Eric Skavlich, Director of Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. This one, I think, is a little easier to explain, and we brought some photos of what we've done in partnership with you and with FEMA. 3 years ago, the Federal Emergency Management Agency allowed state fire training academies to apply for Fire Act grants. We have been very successful in receiving 2 grants. The first one we received was in 2014 for 2 roof ventilation props, which we show in front of you. This allows our fire trainers to take training locally to local fire stations across the state and teach firefighters how to cut open holes in roofs of buildings just in case they have to do it during firefighting. This was covered by the first FEMA grant that you approved. The FEMA grant we currently are working on that also was approved by E-Board is going to replace the skid truck. A lot of you have visited the academy. You've driven the skid car. But we also are fortunate to have a skid truck that we train firefighters on. To make you perhaps a little concerned, 80% of our state is volunteer firefighters, and not that you should be concerned about that, but they learn how to drive fire apparatus in their local communities, and we have multi-ton vehicles with lights and sirens on them with air brakes. We do see across the country, sadly, a number of serious fatality accidents involving fire truck apparatus. We have been very proactive with this program, and we have trained over 6,000 firefighters in Oregon, both career and volunteer, on safe driving practices. This skid truck is being replaced right now. This picture was when it was brand new, so it looks great. It's been beaten and destroyed and repaired and replaced over a number of years because that's what it's designed to do, to do driver training on a large platform. We do take this around the state. What we're asking for in this grant is to acquire two car fire props, replace two flammable liquids trailers, and to create a wireless interface cache. And let me show you what we're doing here. This is one of our car fire props. It's the only one we have currently. We have high demand for this prop, and it allows us to take basically a steel car with propane that we use in a controlled environment, light it on fire, and teach firefighters how to fight car fires. You might think, why do we need to do this? Well, junkyards aren't giving up their cars anymore. The price of steel is too high, and also people don't want all the byproducts of lighting a car on fire in their neighborhood. So this allows us to do it in an environmentally friendly way without any residue. We put it on the trailer at the back end of the night, and we take it to the next community. The next prop, these we have had for over a decade, flammable liquids and gas props. This is the propane tank that catches on fire, the person that drives into a meter. Again, props that we have that allow us to safely train firefighters in their local communities. These are at the end of their service life. We're spending more to maintain them than it's worth. We've asked for the FEMA grant to cover replacement of that. And then finally, this summer, you may recall, we trained a number of members of the Oregon National Guard to be wildland firefighters in a partnership we have with the military department and with the Oregon Department of Forestry. What we ran into was resource issues, because they need the props to fight fires in training just like they would on the scene. Our request is not specifically to help train National Guard, although they'll benefit from it. It's to have a training cache available of all this equipment to local fire departments so we can drop it off at Central Oregon for their wildfire school, at Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, or classes that we do at DPSST. So in a nutshell, this would be a cache of all the equipment in a trailer. We could set it up, basically do the training there, put all the equipment in at the back of the day, and that would help alleviate what we do now, which is take equipment off of in-service apparatus that takes a lot of time and also takes a lot of driving around and picking up all those things. So that's the request that we have in front of you that we've submitted to FEMA.
Thank you. Are there any questions? All right, seeing no questions, we have a motion. Oh, sorry, Ms. Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of the request.
Now do we have a motion?
Mr. Co-Chair, I move the LFO recommendation.
Senator Shields moves the LFO recommendation. Is there any further discussion? All right. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, the motion carries.
Senator Shields, would you be willing to carry that to full?
Yes.
Senator Shields will carry it to full. We'll go ahead and close the work session and open a work session on the Board of Parole and Close Supervision.
Looking right through it.
All right. You want to kick us off, Mr. Walker?
I do. Co-chairs, members of the committee, today we have the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision here, and they're reporting on the implementation progress for House Bill 2320. If you'll remember, in the 2015 session, House Bill 2320 provided the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision additional resources to meet the demands of the static 99 testing that was required by House Bill 2549 in the 2013 session. We provided them $3.2 million general fund and 12 positions and 10 FTE. And we, as a budget note in 2320, requested that they come back before the 2016 legislative session and provide an update on the implementation progress.
So, Ms. Carney, please.
Yes.
co-chair and members of the committee. Excuse my froggy voice this afternoon. I'm Brenda Carney, the executive director at the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision, and I just have a very brief overview of our progress on implementing House Bill 2320, which was the sex offender notification level kind of cleanup bill that afforded us the opportunity to get moving on the notification levels. As LFO Walker stated, we were funded for 12 positions, 10 support staff, and 2 additional board members. We did have some delays in recruitment and finding space to fit all of our new bodies, but as of February 19th, we will be fully staffed with all of those positions. We did have some internal positions that promoted to some of the new positions, so we had to do some additional recruitment there. In reducing the backlog for existing registrants, so these are the historical registrants who were required to register for their sex offenses prior to January 2014. We have been consistently working on that backlog, and up until January of this year, we still only had 2 assessment specialists working on that backlog. So we're not where we'd like to be in the backlog. However, now we have an additional 5 staff to start working on that. So these are the numbers of the total assessments completed, which seems small, but for only 2 people, they've made pretty good progress. And the total classifications, those are the final notifications that go to the state police, and they enter that into the law enforcement data system, as well as for those level 3 offenders, they will be posted on the website as required. This is just a quick breakdown of what some of the delay factors that we had and what we have happening for mitigating those delays. So we do have all of the staff now hired or will be hired within the next few weeks. All of the new sex offender notification level staff that were hired through House Bill 2320, we have obtained the new building space and they are officially moved in and set up and doing their work. Temporary administrative rules were adopted in August of last year, and we just did recently file the permanent rules. All of the staff have been fully trained. With regard to helping on the backlog and catching up on the folks who were required to register after January 2014, we're very fortunate to have the assistance of Department of Corrections. Through their release counselors, they are going to help us facilitate the paperwork back and forth to the registrants, as well as the parole and probation officers in the community. They will also help facilitate the paperwork so that we're not depending on snail mail, and we can make sure that we're getting that paperwork in a more timely manner. Department of Corrections has also agreed to initiate creating an automated caseload for us within their correctional information system, which our information system does interface with. And this is really going to help us tremendously because we're currently working from spreadsheets that are updated every couple of months to make sure that we're getting anyone new who's coming into the system. With regards to the folks who are not on supervision or not in custody, we are making the options available to those folks. We have to mail out via snail mail, but we're giving them the option to fax or return the paperwork via email, which will also help expedite the process. With regards to the alternative assessments for juveniles and females who are not eligible to be scored on the Static 99, those assessments have not yet begun. Our procurement process was fairly lengthy, and it is currently still on ORPIN. That closes February 19th, and we're hoping to have a decent pool throughout the state so we can begin having those assessments conducted. And the forecast on registrants, who will be eligible to petition for either relief from registration or to be reclassified to a lower notification level that begins in January 2019. This is a breakdown of what those eligible registrants will look like. However, these statistics are only based on the research that I could get from DOC. It does not include those who are coming in from out of state and have no profile with Department of Corrections. They've never been involved in the Oregon justice system. They're just registering from another state. So these numbers will be skewed somewhat. But of course, the highest number across the board, level one, the low-risk offenders, we're seeing at about 70% maybe eligible to petition for relief. And of course, they do have to meet the criteria in ORS before they would even be able to petition the board. So if they don't meet that criteria, they won't be able to petition and have a hearing. And same with level two, moderate risk. They would be eligible to petition for reclassification to a level one. Some of them may be eligible because of the timeline that they could petition for relief from registration. And of course, level threes will never get relief from registration, but some of them may be eligible to reclassify into a level two. And that is everything I have to present today. I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, Ms. Carney. Is there any questions? All right, seeing no questions, Mr. Walker.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, I'd just like to point out that the board will also provide an update on the status of the assessments as far as their budget hearing in the 2017 session. So we'll keep on top of how the progress that they're making. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommends acknowledging receipt of the report.
All right, do we have a motion?
Mr. Co-chair, I move the LFO recommendation.
Senator Shields moves the LFO recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Just one question.
Yes, Senator Krieger.
I guess it would be the level one has the most applicants. When you work your way through those and you're done, will there be a reduction in staff available once you've worked through those and you'll be taking them as they come into the system over time rather than have this big buildup you've got now?
I could only estimate, excuse me, co-chairs and Representative Krieger, I can only estimate that as the backlog reduces, we do have a continuous...
And actually, if I could hold the question for one moment and then we take the vote really quick.
Oh, I thought we did.
You know, we haven't actually voted. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, the motion carries. And then, is there anybody... Would you mind carrying that to the... Okay, Representative Wisnant will carry that to the full. Okay, and I apologize for interrupting. The senator need to leave. So
certainly.
We'll go ahead and close the work session. Please, Representative Krieger and Ms. Carney.
Sure, thank you. So, Co-Chair and Representative Krieger, I can only estimate that as the backlog of registrants who come forward, because they've been off supervision for such a long period of time, that will be a large number. However, as time goes by, we will continue to have this rolling number of people who are eligible. At this time, I don't have an estimate of how many will continue to be eligible each year after that, but that's certainly a number I could try to find for you.
Might be interesting, Mr. Chair, how many that are coming in annually on an average into that program, whether we're making any progress at all reducing those numbers.
Is that some information you could provide in the follow-up to us in your next report?
Absolutely.
Okay, please do. Okay, and with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job.